Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. This is Kevin Walter, your host. True Wealth has been on the air for about a decade. I'm coming to you from the recording studio, I guess, inside of the Coins Plus Clock Tower building on 3201 North Division Street. Coins Plus sponsors the radio show True Wealth. And True Wealth's been on our Coins Plus, been in business about 20 years. We are a full service rare coin and precious metals broker dealer depository service. that means we buy and sell all forms of rare coins, precious metals, scrap gold, jewelry, diamonds, you name it. A lot of times when it comes to buying like used jewelry, just for your knowledge, if you're out buying your lover, some jewelry, realize that ultimately when you're buying stuff like that, a lot of times jewelers use the word invest or investment. How much would you like to invest? How much are you investing? When you're buying jewelry, a lot of times you're not investing a lot. The thing you got to understand, the jewelry value is the accumulation or the combination of the value of the item itself or the precious metals that's in, well, simplify that. It's the ultimate long-term value, unless it's a custom piece made by someone famous, is really the combination of the materials that are in it. Sad to say, but true. And that's disappointing to some people, especially now. There are exceptions. These exceptions are what they, name brand stuff like Tiffany or, I don't know, Trout and Coffin or, there's names out there that are special that we don't see. We get Tiffany stuff, but other than that, I mean, a lot of the big Harry Winston and things like that, yeah, they're worth more than the materials, but they're way over the price level that anybody in this area would either have them or whatever. It's just not going to happen. They're just big, big bucks. I remember one time my wife had, I'd just gotten her a nice 3-carat diamond, and we were in Vegas at the JCK or show or some, I don't know what it was, some trade show. And we're walking through the Venetian, and there was a jewelry store, and I said, oh, can I see that diamond? And the lady's like, yeah. And, they saw that my wife had on probably nicer diamonds already. So they're like, sure, wait a minute. And then they start closing the doors of the store. And I'm like, what are you doing? And they said, well, anytime we get anything worth over $75,000 out of the case, we shut the doors, or $100,000 or something like that. And I'm like, wait a minute, I'm looking at this diamond and I'm like, that is not worth $75,000. And I said, no, just forget about it. We walked out, but the whole point was, I mean, they were going to shut down the whole store. I mean, it was just kind of a weird thing. They literally were shutting down and locking us in, because, so somebody doesn't run off. But the other thing, too, I guess my other point was that the I had just bought is not a word, by the way. I had just purchased a diamond for my wife from a client of ours, and it was an absolutely gorgeous 3.5 carat. And I had paid one of our customers about $35,000 for it, and that's what the stone was worth. I mean, 35 grand was a very fair price for them and everything. And probably about 85 to 90% of the retail price. And, for them, when I was in Vegas, for them to be charging 75 or 100 grand or whatever, I think it was actually 100,000+. It's just, long story short, you got to be really careful, folks. Jewelry business is very high profit, very high margin. Okay. And it's not just when you're in Vegas buying 75 grand diamonds, which most of you probably never will be doing. Neither would I. However, it's even when you go to Zales or you go to these mall stores or even Fred Meyer, and people literally come in here with stuff. And this blows my mind. I'm obviously a lot of times I'm talking about things that are on my mind fresh. So you might understand. We just, you know, a lot of times something happens, it triggers a thought, and then I talk about it on the show. But the logic is this. So a person comes in with a diamond ring that is really poor quality, just poor quality. And they say that they got it at Fred Meyer's at 75% off. Now, that's what blows my mind is on top of the fact that the diamond's terrible, they think that they got it 75% off. And they paid $6,000 for a diamond that literally is worth $1,000. So if it was 75% off, at $6,000 for the ring, does that mean that they at Fred Meyer, they were telling them the ring was regularly $24,000 and it really had about $1,000 or $1,500 worth of diamonds in it, I guess, or not diamonds, diamonds and gold, but still, you get my point. It's crazy. People fall for that stuff. Why would, I mean, 75% off, 50% off, folks, if someone's having a 75 or 50% off sale, don't you ask yourself, why do you have so much profit packed in the thing anyway? And don't you realize that that's all air anyway? It's all show, no go. When they do that kind of, FYI, that's all air. What the bottom line is, it doesn't matter how much they say you're saving or how much this or how much that. What it boils, what really, you know, financially life boils down to is what you pay for something. It's what it costs you. And one good example is when you buy metals or a car, okay? So here's an interesting concept. I've had different cars over the years. I've had Lexuses, Toyotas, Mercedes, everything. What really matters, okay, isn't how much the vehicle costs coming off of the showroom or off or from the guy you buy it from. What matters is the difference between what you pay for the vehicle and what you get for it later. I had a Lexus SUV, the big one, the LX570 or whatever, back right. I got, it was like, you know, 2006 or something before the crash of 08. And during the crash of 08, what happened was, the market, the economy was so bad, all these big companies stopped making SUVs. And I had the vehicle. I paid pretty serious price for the vehicle, new. And I had it through the 08 collapse. And then I went and traded in it on another, on a Rover. And it had only, I lost $5,000 off of a $75,000 car. Over driving it 3.5 years because there was a shortage of them and they needed them. And the retail price on them had gone up considerably. So I've had some other luck like that with some different cars I've bought, and I've had luck going the other way, like on a Dodge, you know, the value went the other way, down like a bad habit. And so the bottom line is the difference between what you pay and what you can sell it is very important in when you're caring about your money. There's all kinds of cool things you can buy with your money, but you know, how many of them can you sell? So you got to think about that a lot. Even when you're buying metals, you know, I've spoke to people about the premiums on, you know, Morgans, Peace Dollars, Silver Rounds, Silver Eagles, Gold Eagles, whatever. The buy-sell spread on Morgans is, well, on the cheap generic ones is about $1, which, you know, $16 to $17, you're talking about like whatever that is, 6%. The buy-sell spread on American Silver Eagles can be drastic. They can get as high as, you know, being $3+ over spot with silver at 16 something. That makes them, you know, almost 20% over spot. And then when, like when we had the silver rush here or the market up trend, whatever you want to call it, a while ago, we had Eagles, everything silver was just trading as silver. And I've tried to explain that to some people. If you're going to buy silver, buy silver. If you're going to put it away for the long haul, buy Morgan's, the silver side. Or, you know, even the old U.S. silver coinage, people will refer to it as junk silver and things like that, which is a really dumb, insulting name, in my opinion, to call it junk silver, because it really, it makes you think it's just this trash stuff that's been run over by a truck, and it's not. In fact, you can get uncirculated junk silver that's the most beautiful, brand new JFK halves you've ever seen. Just, you know, and then, of course, you can go to the proofs that I mentioned a while ago, where we just are finally getting together some of the Proof Deep Cameo Ultra Cam 69 perfect coins, some of the very first coins ever off the die from the 1964 Proof Kennedys and Franklins. We've had some people call that want those as they become available as we go through the stuff. But if you think of the significance of that, you think of the fact that they designed the 1964 Kennedy half dollar. And we have some of the very first coins off of the proof dies. They're graded proof 69 ultra cameo, you know. And believe it or not, they're thousands of dollars a piece, a couple thousand, you know, or 3,000 or whatever. But that's the very first 1964 John F. Kennedy silver half dollars in proof. You know, I mean, to me, that's a big deal. When you get back to the older stuff, it, you know, when they're the first, they're the first. I mean, that's a big deal. So even though they seem a little expensive to me, it makes really good sense that they're worth what they're worth. Anyway, so I just, to me, the value seems to make good sense. And the amount of those that are out there, they just don't come around. They just don't come around ever. And they're perfect, absolutely perfect. In fact, they don't typically grade them that high. I mean, it's just the handful. I was just trying to look up the what they call the census report on those. I think there's just a handful that have ever been graded, but I don't have the I don't have the NGC census right in front of me right now. So anyway, it's called the population report. So let me see here. I got it. Well, I'll get to that later if I can find it while we chat. But, the whole thing is, you know, there's coins and then there's coins. And, you know, I was reading this thing, you know, there, you get these things that, you know, there's like 15 secrets coin dealers don't want you to know. And, you know, and then they sit there and they try to, you know, they basically take worst case scenarios, which I've explained to people, and try to act like this is how it all works with coin dealers. And then, of course, they're coin dealers, but they're First Federal Bullion, and they want, or American Federal Rare Coin. I like the name of the company, American Federal Rare Coin and Bullion. And they're basically explaining that coins are, they're basically explaining, and I'm reading this crazy report I found online that kind of runs down a lot of the coin investing. And the reason is that, like, I'm always talking about these marketing companies, right? There's these marketing companies out there that are just really putting the boots to people, I guess, for lack of a better, softer term, sadly, but truly. And what they do is, my opinion is, their biggest fault is that they are using, number one, commissioned salespeople. You don't, when it comes to investing, commissions can be very counterproductive or contradictive. Contrary to, you know, they're not in the customer's best interest. How about we say that? And so, of course, Coins Plus has never, ever provided a commission to anybody for any profit margin. We do bonuses based on hours worked and things like that and how the shop's doing and things like that. But it's never based on an individual transaction. And that, because that way we can take care of the customer. You don't want, when you put the salesman or the, you know, the coin buyer seller on a profit margin, you put the customer and the employee at odds with each other, technically, where they, you know, they have conflicting needs and conflicting desires. When the commission employee wants to make more money so they can take more home to their family, I mean, it's not fair. It's just not fair. It's not fair to the client. And so we just don't do that at Coins Plus. I pay people a very fair salary. For those of you who've known us for many, many years, we really don't have people quit. You know, we'll have people that we have to let go now and then, or that just move on as friends and come back later or whatever. But in general, we don't have people quit. It's only happened on a handful of occasions, maybe a couple, two people, I think, have ever really quit. And usually they're people that are here for a very short time and realize the rigors and demands of the job are too much for them or not a match or whatever. But typically, over time, I pay people pretty well. So anyway, coins in general, the bottom line with coin investing, without getting into, I know a lot of you are like, wow, what, you know, I don't know anything about this. The truth of the matter is, you know, there's like, they have this thing that says, you know, many coin investors lose money. There's actual truth to that. And here's why. Okay. The biggest placers of coins in really in existence is like, Goldline for years, was very, very involved. Big, at least in our area, they had the radio show, The American Advisor, and they, you know, they had Joe Battaglia. I don't know. They may still have the radio show, but the biggest problem is they have rooms full, and I visited them one time years, many, many, many years back, like when they were down, or they were in Southern California, and they probably still are. Mark Albarian owned them, and they had rooms full of what I would call boiler rooms of solicitors that are selling. They're just telephone solicitors. They're not coin people. They don't know anything. And they've got a product to sell, and they've got a lot of it. And they've got a whole bunch of bullet points to key off of. And all, you know, they've got all these sales points they're supposed to tee off of that, you know, hopefully one of them will work for you. The problem is they'll sell like just generic, super common, like, certified coins that are so common in higher grades that they don't do well. They'll do well when the market does well, but in general, they don't just climb and climb and climb. There are certain coins, collector coins in general, that just climb and climb and climb. And that's where you get into true rarities. I mean, and a true rarity doesn't always have to cost you an arm and a leg. That's kind of the shocking part. I think that it really doesn't. It's like there's some great collectibles, a 14D penny, for the Lincoln Head series, the 11Ss. There's all kinds of good stuff out there, and they just don't have to cost you an arm and a leg. You can get them, you know, any way you want them, but you can buy them. You can afford them. You can get them for 40, 50 bucks, whatever. There's a whole bunch of different things. There's rolls of that stuff. We get investors where we'll do a large, substantial investment, and I'll actually put in a roll of things like an 11S penny, or I'll put in some different kinds of, you know, quality type coins and things like that. You know, it's just what I do. I mean, it's just because I know they're going to perform well over time. It's not based on, you know, high volume, you know, MS64, common date, you know, generic, certain items, whatever, but, or especially modern, silver commemorative dollars or something. which are fine, but they're worth their silver. Now, we recently sold a bunch of gold commemorative, $5 gold commemoratives, which take, you know, I mean, the mintages are terribly low and they're too cheap. And those are great upside potential. And then we had someone call, you know, we sold a ton of those, and we had someone call frustrated because they hadn't gone out. Our policy, folks, on money is either use a cashier's check if you want immediate delivery, or a personal check is 10 business days to clear. People occasionally will call and they'll say, but it cleared by bank. Well, that doesn't matter, folks. I mean, if you are thinking from a business perspective, typically the people that are misunderstanding that have not been in business, because the fact of the matter is, just because it clears the bank doesn't mean it's locked and loaded. We've had them come back 12 days late. One came back 30 days afterwards, which was a fraud situation where they'd stolen the paper from American Express. But the bottom line is 12 days, 10 days, you can have it go through the bank, and then you can have people withdraw funds. You can have people seize funds on the other end. Banks have 6 months to take your money. I mean, 6 months legally. And it is unbelievable. It can and will and does happen to people. I know a dealer that had a guy convince him. He came in a number of times. He was dealing with an estate. And he convinced him that this check was good from the estate, that the check was good. And so the bank or the coin dealer verified the funds. He verified this guy was on the account. He verified all this stuff. And he did $2 million gold transaction. And like 5 months and, you know, 28 days to the day, he had the feds show back up and say, look, that transaction wasn't legal. This guy committed fraud. And they told the coin dealer, you owe the money. Okay, well, the problem is, in our business, when you do a $2 million gold transaction, you know, if you're lucky, if he really killed it, he made 2%. Well, that's still 40 grand. But 40 grand to 2 million when the feds are saying, you owe us $2 million and you owe it now. And he's like, wait a minute, they've taken the gold. The gold's gone. They've taken the gold and I've got no money left. And they're like, too bad, you've got to return it. Even though he's got it in writing from the bank that it's legit, you know, on and on and on. Of course, it becomes a legal mess at that point. But the point is, the banks have up to 6 months to come back and yank funds out of your account. So just realize, folks, yuck, right? If you're looking for a nice mix right now, if you really want to invest and you want to save, like silver dollars, silver period, like I said, silver dollars, we've got better dates. I've got uncirculated rolls of the 1880s, 1880 San Francisco, the very, you know, beginning of the Morgan silver dollar. We have legitimate uncirculated rolls. I mean, I'm talking fully legitimate, not anything phony, you know, nothing goofy, the real deal. And they run, you know, you're looking at probably $1,000 a roll. A roll has 20 coins. You know, but you're talking about uncirculated original rolls of silver dollars from the earliest of the 1800s. Those are good investments in the long run. I remember when I got in the business in the 90s, when I really got going, I remember when those things were $180 a roll. So, yeah, they haven't done the best of the best, but they've gone up sixfold, you know, or five to sixfold, 550%. In 20-ish years. So that's okay with me. I mean, you know, people want this get-rich-quick scheme, and they want to, you know, buy Facebook or whatever it is on a public offering and, you know, have it go through the roof. Well, when Facebook was publicly offered, it went down hard for 2 years. I had a friend lose his tail on it. And then eventually, I'm sure it came back. But, you know, the bottom line is, in my mind, this is just my opinion, folks. Why not just be safe and conservative? Why not just be, you can take a little bit of money and play with it, but don't go risk it all. You know how many times somebody makes money in their industry and then loses it somewhere else, okay? Doctors are notorious. I hate to insult them, but I've spent years in banking and finance, and it's always a joke, is that they make money in their own industry, and then sometimes, you know, sometimes, a lot of times they lose it in something else. I know a cardiologist who makes tremendous money, but he's got these two other guys that have him convinced that they're working on this huge, you know, some kind of medication administration system. I don't even remember what it was. He tried to get me to invest. I said, no thanks. And he is literally pumping. He's living simple. And he's pumping every extra penny he has into this. Well, I believe that the two other guys are taking advantage of him dearly. I know a guy who owned a cable company who got sucked in by a bunch of computer programmers into supposedly building this website, you know, app function that essentially was just an internal necessity that he thought was going to become something everybody would want. And, you know, operations like Google and all that were miles ahead of him. I mean, he was trying to build an app or a function that just was not needed, and he couldn't keep up with fast enough. He lost all of his money doing that, okay? I know another surgeon who lost all of his money by letting a broker talk him into supposedly investing in some construction stuff in Guatemala, seriously. And, you know, so the bottom line is, folks, simplicity is simplicity. God's system and God's way is very simple, very basic. He says, you know, you want to keep your life free from the love of money, and you want to be content with what you have. Jesus said he'll never leave you nor forsake you, right? And the love of money is the root of all evils and all that stuff. And Jesus said you can't serve two men. All that stuff. We get all that. That applies to everything in our life. It applies to medication. It applies to speed limits. It applies to our speech. It applies to everything. But once we stay within those boundaries, right, then God can flourish, and he wants to. You know, the more I've gotten into this and the more I've studied his word, and it's pretty obvious to me that God wants us to be, quote, successful, right? There's so many, I've talked about this, so many Christians that believe that your poverty will really help you reflect your humility. I do believe that God puts us through some tough times to refine us. I certainly went through them. I think that we can't be ashamed of him. I think we get down on our knees and we beg and pray for mercy and grace and forgiveness and for transformation. And we start to realize that God owns everything in the universe. Everything is his. Everything. All things belong to him. He wants you happy, healthy. He does. He's got it all in the palm of his hand. You've got all kinds of challenges. You've got words like discipline in the Bible, which is a word that refers to what God wants to do to his believer. It's a word that shows that God's working on us like the military works on their Rangers, in a way, you know, where he's constantly working to bring us, you know, Proverbs is full of it, right? Do not reject the discipline of the Lord or loathe his reproof. Now, what is the discipline of the Lord in Proverbs 3? you know, you go into that, and the word is mukar, or I think it's pronounced, how about that, musar. And it's chastening and correction, and it means, you know, it's restraint and cleansing and warning and correction and teaching, bringing up in doctrine, instruction, rebuke. It's checking, right? So we know that God wants us to be disciplined. So how do you get disciplined? It's through discomfort. So we have to, for whoever the Lord reproves, it says, whoever the Lord loves, he reproves, even as a father corrects the son in whom he delights. Even if he delights in the son, even if he loves his son, he's going to reprove him. He's going to allow that to happen. And he's going to, you know, he's going to let that happen because it makes us stronger, right? And I mean, that really is what it boils down to, is the discipline of the Lord keeps us good. And we've got the reproofs for discipline are the way of life in Proverbs 6. For the commandment is a lamp and the teaching is a light. And reproofs for discipline are the way of life. You know, which you think about it, that's sort of like a commitment to, a training program. It reminds me of martial arts, where people dedicate themselves to the dojo for years or life. And it says, for the commandment is a lamp and the teaching is a light. In other words, God's commandment is a lamp and the teaching is a light. It's showing you the way. It's teaching you the way. And then what he says, and reproofs for discipline are the way of life. So being reproved, folks, corrected, if you're defensive, work on that. Work on when someone approaches you and says, hey, you know, this bothered me or that. First of all, rule out becoming defensive over anything that is just not overly personal. You know, it's like, hey, when you said this, it hurt my feelings. You don't go back and say, well, that's your problem, or that's not what I meant. Or you say, you know what, I apologize if that hurt your feelings. Okay, and then they go on and on. You say, I apologize that hurt your feelings. I certainly didn't intend it to. And you basically go through, you know, you give them a formal apology of respect and you show them that you didn't intend to do that. That's not the kind of person you are. You don't want to intentionally hurt people's feelings. That's how you, reproofs for discipline are a way of life. I have a friend who's the head of a battalion, I think, in the U.S. Army Rangers, and he loves Proverbs, and he's writing a book, you know, eventually about his experiences someday, and, you know, it's Proverbs is the whole book of wisdom, the book of life. It's what's at the core of it, and it says, you know, the one he fetters, whoever loves discipline loves knowledge. But he who hates reproof, okay, reproof is being corrected. He who hates it is stupid, the Bible says. Well, we all work with someone like that or know someone like that, or, you know, God works on us in our hearts. And so we need to just accept it the way it is and the way it comes. And we just need to be open-minded and realize no matter who it is, no matter who it is, we've got to be open to it. Let's see. And we've got to be open to basically our own, to being corrected and reproved. We've got to be, you know, willing to be taught and molded in his word. And as a matter of fact, Proverbs 15, which I was on Father's Day, I read with my son who was out of town. He said, what do you want for Father's Day? I said, you know what I'd like? I said, get a drink of your choice, and we'll sit down and over the phone, and we will each have a drink of our choice, and we will read the book of Proverbs over the phone. And that was my Father's Day gift. And it, even though it might not be my son's favorite thing to do, it's important to me. But Proverbs 15 is, a gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. The tongue of the wise makes knowledge acceptable, but the mouth of fools spouts folly. The eyes of the Lord are in every place, watching the evil and the good. A soothing tongue is a tree of life, but perversion in it crushes the spirit. A fool rejects his father's discipline, but he who regards reproof is sensible. Great wealth is in the house of the righteous, but trouble is in the income of the wicked. Now, that's interesting, isn't it? Great wealth is in the house of the righteous. And, you know, I've tried to slice and dice that every way I can. The word for wealth is kosin, and it means strength, treasure, or riches. And it's not talking about muscle strength. It means financial strength. It means great wealth, great riches and treasure are in the house of the righteous. So why, how, I don't know. What I believe is, when you honor God with your life, I believe, and you tithe and you trust in him and all that, you do, you obey his commands, I believe that he blesses you. I mean, I don't, like I said, I'm not a health and wealther, but I know a lot of people that have been through some really tough stuff with cancer and stuff, and they pray for God's will. And that's, of course, that's, you know, that's a given, right? I mean, we want to be in his will, but what's the purpose of praying for his will? I mean, isn't God's will technically going to occur anyway? Are we not his children? Okay, if we are his children and he wants to bless us or do good or we need something, isn't it okay to go to him and ask for that? I mean, if we need help accomplishing a certain task, or we want something to sell to help us out, you know, and I've actually ran into a situation that I discussed where I had one individual that would not, that said, I will not pray specifics. I will only pray for God's will. And I'm like, well, then why did you ask if we had any needs? He said, well, I just didn't know if you had any health needs, which I don't know if that means he'd pray specifically for health needs, or it just, I don't know what it meant, but it's a weird way to live life. And the guy is, he's a pretty stringent guy. He's not one that I would really describe as having the joy of the Lord. The other thing, too, is when we talk to people, we've got, you know, there's whiners, no doubt. There's the whiners of the earth. And it's interesting because a lot of people don't like to hear it. They don't, you know, they don't like it. They just don't like it. On the other hand, you know, we've got to share with others what we are experiencing and what we are going through as fellowship. We've got to be able to show and share with others exactly what it is that we're experiencing, for better or worse, for positive or negative, because that's our life and it does matter and God does care. And that's the thing that you got to realize. God, why did God put us here? Okay, did God put us here to suffer? Obviously not, because he started us out in the garden. Then we sinned, right? And we fell short of the glory of God. And then sin began to abound on the earth, correct? So his ultimate goal for us, and then he created wealth and money, and he says ultimately the righteous or the wicked will be storing up for the righteous. And he explains all these things that are going to happen. We are, you know, the wicked storing up the wealth for the righteous. The righteous's day is coming. When? I don't know. I don't know what happens after we die, folks. We know that Jesus said, today you'll be with me in paradise. We know that Jesus rose from the grave, and other people as well. But we don't know if there's a holding period, a holding pattern. It appears that there is with heaven, that there's a holding pattern before everyone goes up and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So I don't know. We just have to be prepared. The lips of the wise spread knowledge, but the hearts of fools are not so. The sacrifice of the wicked is an abomination of the Lord, but the prayer of the upright is his delight. And it goes on, you know, Sheol and Abaddon lie open. A scoffer does not love one who proves him, who reproves him, he will not go to the wise. A joyful heart makes a cheerful face, but when the heart is sad, the spirit is broken. The mind of the intelligent seeks knowledge, but the mouth of fools feeds on folly. All the days of the afflicted are bad. All the days of the afflicted are bad. And then, can you imagine if I felt that way? But then it says, a cheerful heart has a continual feast. So we've got, I don't know if that means the real afflicted or if it's an attitude thing. Better is a little with the fear of the Lord than great treasure with turmoil in it. Better is a dish of vegetables where love is than a fattened ox served with hatred. I was trying to look for something here. Oh, well, you know, everyone knows this. Without consultation, plans are frustrated, but with many counselors, they succeed. Folks, if you're making any major decisions, call and get advice. If you're making financial decisions, call me. If you don't get through, leave a message. But don't bring me, folks, a bunch of, every once in a while, I'm going to be honest, I get some people that are pretty out on the fringe. I mean, I don't know if you have mental illness or what it is, but I get these huge multi-page handwritten, you know, corrections of how to run the show and what's wrong with everything I say. And, you know, like I said, I don't know if it's a mental illness thing. I don't know what it is, but save yourself the ink because it just doesn't get read. If it isn't, you know, if it's just condemnation, it doesn't do much good. I'm pretty aware of what's going on out there. Anyway, so just remember, you want wise counsel in all that you do. A man has joy in an apt answer, and how delightful is a timely word. The path of life leads upward for the wise, that he may keep away from Sheol below. And then it goes on how the Lord will tear down the house of the proud. God hates pride, right? But he will establish the boundary of the widow. Evil plans are an abomination to the Lord, but pleasant words are pure. He who profits illicitly troubles his own house, but he who hates bribes will live. So don't profit illicitly. The heart of the righteous ponders how to answer, but the mouth of the wicked pours out evil things. Think about that. The mouth of the wicked pours out evil things. If you're wicked, apparently, and you're not walking with the Lord, you're just gushing garbage. The heart of the righteous ponders how to answer, et cetera. So we will leave it at that for today. A couple other things to just discuss here. There's the other thing, too, I guess, that's kind of been on my mind lately is the two yous. Okay, you've got Peter's dichotomy. Okay, we know about Peter in the New Testament. There's the two yous, Peter's dichotomy. Think of the fact that, you've got the fact that he says, I will never leave you nor forsake you or whatever, or I would never reject you, he says to Jesus. And Peter, you know, eventually ends up here and then Jesus predicts that, by the time he hears the cock crow or the rooster crow, I think twice or three times, he will have betrayed him multiple times. And then he hears it and he realizes what happened. And, it's interesting that Peter, I guess what I'm saying is each one of us, Peter is, an example of each one of us. Peter shows that each one of us has our weak points and our strong points. And we have our good days and our bad days. We have our sins and our good things. But God said, I'm going to build a church on you. And Peter was very human. Peter was very human. There was something about him God really liked. And I don't know if it was his heart. I don't know what it was. But there was something that God loved about Peter. Because Peter rejected him. Peter turned and ran. And Peter was not always there. Okay. And it's kind of interesting. But once Peter was there, watch out. He became strong and bold and emboldened. And Paul, you know, came in alongside of him. And Paul had an incredible level of teaching. And so you got to realize that, you know, if Peter had not been so human, we would not be talking about him today. Secondly, Paul. How about the fact that Paul's scriptures were ultimately written from prison cells? I mean, think of that. The guy, you know, what man meant for evil, God uses for good. The guy literally is in prison, literally. And what does he do? He writes the epistles, you know, to the churches, and it becomes permanent scripture forever. That's pretty cool. So I think it's how God uses us in our challenging times, is, you know, he puts us there. He really helps us. And I think I mentioned on Monday the whole passion thing, where the study that showed that people that are passionate about everything are successful. People that are seeking something to be passionate about are not. So realize that when God's got you down and he's got you, you know, in a hard spot, which we've all been, you know, trust in him, turn to him, thank him, ask him, you know, can you overcome it? Can you overcome it for an hour? Can you overcome it for a day? Can you overcome it for a minute? Can you, you know, whatever it is you're enduring, or whatever it is you're, you know, forthgoing, I mean, give yourself some breathing room. Allow yourself, you know, the ability to let it go. I mean, to just let go, as they say, and let God and see where you end up. We've got, I'm reading some articles here lately. We've got, a pretty good return on metals over the last 40, 50 years. And experts are predicting a 3 to 5 year run starting this fall. The Dow is kind of a mess, folks. I mean, if you want to be really honest about it, it is a mess. It's all over the place. I personally think that it is so overbought or overstretched. It makes no sense. Trump had some kind of method of pumping money into it, or getting everybody's money off the sidelines or something. He did something, right? He did something to get it going. Maybe just getting elected was all that it took. But we now are in a situation where we've got to deal with the consequences of what is coming down. So, you know, if you compare stocks to metals over the last 10, 40, and I put even 200 years, the metals outperformed them in every single time frame, okay? Gold and silver. And as I've mentioned in the past, they offer peace of mind. Security and peace of mind, true wealth building. You know, you're really building a real capital foundation. And I talk about this a lot, folks, but it's solid, it's true, it's real. You know, do whatever you want. If you want your American Silver Eagles and you want to pay the premium, do it. A lot of people listen to us and save the money, but if you don't want to, that's fine. That's your business. If you want the antique upside with the silver growth that's already built in, then you want to do silver dollars and things like that, and we'll help you do that. We have the highest rated privately held depository service in the Western region, for sure. We've got, you know, the we've got the dollar just continues to erode, folks, quietly behind the scenes as Trump does all of his magic. And as the media, I've just talking to friends here today. I cannot stand Fox News anymore. I mean, it's just constantly trying to defend against attacks, against personal attacks against the president. The Saul Alinsky model, you know, where the rules for radicals, which in which he dedicates the beginning of the book to Lucifer. I mean, there's no question about what he was doing at the time, and now they try to say, well, that's not what he meant. You know, and I'll just look it up here. Dedicates rules for radicals to Lucifer. Okay, so let's see. Oh, where is it? Oh, well. Saul Alinsky rules for radicals. I'm just trying to find this. I'm sorry. I'm so unprepared sometimes because I never know where I'm going. But I just really want you to hear this. I mean, the entire left wing movement right now hangs their hat on Saul Alinsky's harsh, destructive, hateful, unagreeable, divisive, you know, it's spiritual warfare. And the problem with that is that it never stops. It never changes. It really is. It's a scary thing, to be honest with you, because it is designed to create constant chaos. It says, power is not what you have, but what the enemy thinks you have. That's number one. Power is derived from two main sources, money and people. Have-nots must build power from flesh and blood. Number two, never go outside the expertise of your people. It results in confusion, fear, and retreat. Feeling secure adds to the backbone of anyone. Number three, whenever possible, go outside the expertise of the enemy. Look for ways to increase insecurity, anxiety, and uncertainty. Number four, make the enemy live up to his own book of rules. If there is that every if the rule is that every letter gets a reply, send 30,000 letters. You can kill them with this because no one can possibly obey all their own rules. Why would you even want to kill them with it? That's the whole problem. It's just terrible. It's showing up at people's public restaurants and screaming and yelling. And it's the stuff they do in D.C. and lately that's been on the news that's pretty harsh and pretty heavy. Number five, ridicule is man's most potent weapon. There is no defense. It's irrational. It's infuriating. It also works as a key pressure point to force the enemy into concessions. Now, think about this with Trump and the border and this whole thing about babies being ripped out of their arms. What did they do? Ridicule, ridicule, ridicule. So they say ridicule is man's most potent weapon. So they rip on Trump. Then no matter what he does, oh, they made him do it. Or if he doesn't do it, they trash him. This is the thing. They believe in tearing down, not building up. You know, let no unwholesome word come out of your mouth, but that which edifies the hearer. Ephesians 4:29. They're saying no, ridicule. They're saying to destroy and, you know, and to tear down people, to break them down, to not build people up. So basically, they're tearing the world down for Lucifer. At the beginning of the Rules for Radicals, I think what shocked me the most was where he wrote, let's see what else he wrote. He wrote somewhere in here about how he dedicated it to Lucifer. And that's in the actual book itself, but I don't have that here in front of me. So anyway, Saul Alinsky's, a good tactic is one your people enjoy. They'll keep doing it without urging, you know, which, you know, that can be anything. A tactic that drags on too long becomes a drag. Don't become old news. So they've always got to be doing something new, something harsh, something out of control, something reckless, you know, and then you get the Antifas of the world. that go vandalize everything. They put the Antifas out. I think they've probably arrested a bunch of them, but they put the Antifas out to make the Olinskians look mellow. You know, and it's like if you push a negative hard enough, it will push through and become a positive. I mean, that stuff's just crazy. This is, you know, we've got all this Joseph Goebbels stuff. We've got all this, you know, you lie, tell a lie long enough, make it big enough, and everybody will believe it. And you've got Saul Alinsky. You've got all this weird, if you push a negative long enough, it'll become a positive, whatever. I don't know. So we're getting down there in time, folks. We've got some basic, you know, tenants that are pretty rough coming out of Saul Alinsky's stuff. How about pick the target, freeze it, personalize it, and polarize it? Cut off the support network and isolate the target from sympathy. Go after people and non-institutions. People hurt faster than institutions. So this is the thing. They go after individuals, one by one by one by one. I hope whoever leads this cause and leads this charge is prepared for their day of judgment. Because the level of destruction that they've forced is not good in a lot of cases. So basically, folks, we didn't really get too deep into any one thing today. We do have, I believe, a good buying opportunity. We've got a bunch of silver dollars. We've got some, I mean, and we just bought a nice batch of uncirculated rolls. They're probably the first uncirculated rolls of pre-21 Morgans I've bought in a very, 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 very long time. I mean, I can tell you, I used to buy them a lot more often, and I'm really starting to miss them. And we just bought some. They're rare. I mean, they're rare to have the 20 coins that stick together, uncirculated. They don't separate over, you know, 1880 to 2018, 138 years. There's an uncirculated roll that's still intact. Yeah. I'd say that's pretty significant. So, yeah, that kind of stuff is good to have. I think the next big coin run. All right, well, end of show. Take care. God bless. Bye-bye.